we're all humans at the end of the day. So I've been having a lot more human conversations about not just, oh, well, this project happened or whatever, but how did it actually feel? And during that, you know, when I was doing something or when we were implementing that project, or how does this make somebody feel? How does this technology make people feel? Or, you know, just really humanizing, not just that broad kind of like, oh, well, we're doing this for the community, but humanizing all the elements underneath it as well. Because if we've got to do things differently, it makes in our bodies will feel different as well.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hi, Smart Community friends. It is producer Ellen Reynolds-Keene here in the host seat for this episode because the guest is Zoe Ether, the host of the Smart Community Podcast. And we are celebrating 350 episodes today. Can you believe it? It is a huge milestone, so we thought it would be a fun time to do another special Ask Zoe Anything episode featuring a bunch of listener questions that we have gathered mostly from LinkedIn. So if you're not part of the MySmart community, LinkedIn community, come and join us there because that's where all the chats happen and that's where we've drawn these questions from. So welcome, Zoe, to your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. So we have got some questions for you today in celebration of 350 episodes of the Smart Community Podcast, which is just such an amazing milestone. So the Smart Cities and Communities conversation has evolved significantly since you started the show in early 2018. How has your podcast adapted and grown and matured alongside the changes in the industry?
What a great question. I think, honestly, one, I think I've become a better interviewer. Well, let's hope. I remember the first couple of episodes, or first many couple of episodes, you know, I had my little script and, you know, I'll read it and, well, you know, and ask those questions in order, no matter what was kind of happening. Whereas now it's a bit more, you know, we dive in a bit deeper in certain things. I kind of see where the conversation's going and then we hit other things as well. So I think I'm hoping that it builds for a more enriched conversation and something. And I know I get comments to say that people like it when I talk back to people, like as if I'm at school, but we actually have a dialogue rather than just, you know, back and forth, like just a question and answer. And then I think linking that to the whole conversation for smart cities and communities is that it's more people driven, hopefully, as well. Like the conversations are more organic and real. And I think the smart communities conversation is also becoming more organic and real and not just like, oh, how do we build a smart city? What technology do I need to include to call myself a smart city? We move way past that. And I think, yeah, so I think that hopefully that analogy works of just building more realness into the podcast and the conversations. I see more realness on the outside as well, which is fun.
So fun. But coming back to that conversation about technology, our first question is from friend of the show, Jonathan Reichenthal, who has been on three times, episode 77, episode 251, and episode 275. We'll link them in the show notes. And Jonathan asks, what should city managers be doing right now relative to generative AI in their agencies?
That's a great question. And Jonathan and I have spoken about this as well. We've hung out in New Zealand, actually, and we're going to hang out again very soon, or maybe even we've hung out since this episode goes live. But I think one of the biggest things is we need to understand what it is and what it isn't. And I don't mean you need to know like what the code is necessarily. You need people that know that. But as an agency, we want to see how we can use it as a tool. And I think now that it's becoming more mainstream and more accessible, that's great because people are going to be asking more questions about it. And it's going to be, I guess, more in the dialogue of kind of everyday population. But what it means is that we need to have more robust kind of conversations, and not just conversations, but put things in place to make sure that we're not just putting a megaphone to the biases, or we're just, you know, creating more black boxes and things like that. So I think for an agency, it's important to have a little, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say pilot.
Discernment?
No, I want to say, like, you want to start exploring it, right? And the only way you do that is actually trying it out and using it. And so, and in a safe way, so like kind of sandboxing it. And I think the way you can do that is you can hire in some like new grads or someone from different industries that have the skills that can kind of build that capability in-house as well. Because I think if we don't do that, we won't understand. We'll just continue to be this black box. Things will, it'll be misused, all those type of things as well. But you get in and you get, and you understand it by playing around with it, right? And playing around with it sounds like a bit, you know, light, but it's not really. It's like actually setting up something so then you can do, you can play around with it in a safe way that's not, you know, affecting people's lives, but you can get such great learnings from actual implementation and doing things on the ground. Whereas in this case, on the ground is, you know, in a digital environment. But I do think it's really important.
And so like people need experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So like people need experience, because if they don't actually get in there and kind of get their boots dirty, even though they're digital boots,
digital boots.
As you say, only the people who are using it and learning how it works and trying things out end up being the only ones that know how to do it. And if that ends up being the, you know, the bad actors, that's the problem. So we need everyone to be learning it and giving it a go and trialing it and getting that experience.
Yeah, and setting up a sandbox, I think, in a way, when I say sandbox, I mean, like, cause if you go onto ChatGPT right now and type things in, that's all publicly available, right? So if you're not paying for the service. So one, need to be aware of that. Government agencies particularly need to be aware of that. And
because of the privacy of the data, they might be just handing out to anyone and everyone by putting it into the AI.
Exactly. And so that's important to understand and know. And I think then, like, ChatGPT isn't the only generative AI either. There's other software and things that have been around for like a longer time. But we know now that we, you know, as progress has happened, as computing power, et cetera, then we can see this in a more accessible way. And talking to Jonathan as well, he often talks about like AI isn't going to take over the world. It's the people that know how to use it and use it as a tool. And so we need to understand how we can use it as a tool. And I think thinking about particular use cases for it as well. So it's not just like, oh, cool, I've got this AI that's going to hang around and help me out. It's like, well, what are the use cases that I could use this for, or potential use cases? Because I think we need to, this is a different way of doing things, right? A different way of, you know, thinking. So you need to start a project or whatever you want to call it, an initiative, in a different way as well, where you've got people that have different thinking, different backgrounds, different experiences, so then you can build something out with those big, big ideas. Because otherwise, yeah, you do just get stuck in doing it the way you've done it. And then it's like this mystery thing that, oh, well, only the so-and-sos know about how to do this. And then you can't be informed buyers when you want to buy it and all those type of things as well. So you actually have to get in and play around and have a go. And because if you don't, then you will get left behind, in inverted commas. But yeah, you just, I think, don't be scared of it, because it's here, things are shifting and changing. But also then you can make decisions about what you are and aren't going to use it for, what is it being used for now, what it shouldn't be, and those type of things. But if you don't know like what it actually, you know, is and does and things like that, then you can't make those decisions either.
Totally. I was just talking to a writer friend of mine 2 days ago about, because I had asked ChatGPT for some inspiration for an answer for an application I was filling out, and it was rubbish. It spat out garbage, right? It was utter nonsense. And then I was chatting to her and she said, oh gosh, I'm loving ChatGPT. I'm getting such great stuff from it. I was like, oh really? Because I got garbage. And then she was explaining to me, like, it's almost like the responses that, you know, AI gives, at least at the moment, is kind of up to the skill of the driver, right? So one, you need to actually just get experience with the tool to figure out how best to use it and how it works, you know, all of that. But also, you know, like in the case of writing, you need to be a reasonable, not that I'm not a bad writer, but not that I'm not a good writer, I mean, but like if I wasn't a decent writer, I might not have realized that what it spat out at me was terrible and I wasn't going to use that. Whereas, yeah, in the hands of someone who doesn't really understand, that could be problematic because they just take AI's word for it, right? So yeah, it's that skill of the driver too. And you only get that by learning to drive and practicing.
Totally right. Like I think about like when I learned how to drive, and I learned how to drive manual because I'm from the country. But it's like, if you don't know how to drive a manual, you don't know how to drive a manual. There's many steps that you need to get to actually be driving the thing properly. And so there's so many things along the way that you have to do it.
Great. Well, I mean, that's such a huge topic. I'm sure that we could go on forever and ever and probably get some more guests on the podcast to talk about generative AI and what, you know, particularly cities and, you know, local governments and things should be looking at there. So the next question is from Chrissy Ditmore, who has also been on the show, episode 161 and 295. And her question is, what are the quick response strategies that we implemented in the early days of the pandemic that we should absolutely make a smart community standard going forwards? Which is such a good question.
It's such a good question. And yeah, I've been having a bit of a think about this. I think what was really interesting during the pandemic is how quickly things that seemed immovable changed. And like there's many, many examples, as we know, and some were positive, some were negative, some, you know, were neutral, some were positive for some and negative for others and vice versa. But it just goes to show that when we get together as a global community and we say that this is a big issue that we need to act on right now, we can do it. Yes, there were, you know, mistakes happen, we learned lessons, that type of thing, 100%. But I think one of the biggest things is even just the process of when things need to move quickly, they can, and they did. Obviously, some countries quicker than others and decisions, other than that, we're like, to have a uniform approach across the world, I think is, would have been impossible. Like it's not real because we're humans at the end of the day. But actually what I really liked as well is how much we came back to the human elements of our lives. And something I've been thinking about recently is just like how we do come back to those human elements, and kind of goes to, and didn't really think about this until you asked the question about like what's, you know, changed and shifted. We talked about people a lot, but I was thinking more people at like a community level, which is, you know, obviously really important. But then when you dive down, we're all humans at the end of the day. So I've been having a lot more human conversations about not just, oh, well, this project happened or whatever, but how did it actually feel? And during that, you know, when I was doing something or when we were implementing that project, or how does this make somebody feel? How does this technology make people feel? Or, you know, just really humanizing, not just that broad kind of like, oh, well, we're doing this for the community, but humanizing all the elements underneath it as well. Because if we're going to do things differently, it makes, in our bodies, we'll feel different as well. And sometimes that's good or bad, but actually listening to that a bit more, no matter how technical the project is,
it's a different type of data.
It is. And the numbers and the stories are really important. Both of those, so the qualitative and the quantitative are really important. But then it's a data layer that I hadn't really thought about too much until you really stripped it back. And again, you know, it's like kind of coming, I think we're all suffering from a, you know, kind of a trauma that we all went through, right?
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
Coming out the other side, but also people have those in their everyday lives all the time, but we just have this kind of global, you know, collectiveness as well. But just bringing back to the human elements of all the things that we do, and that smart communities are about that as well. It's not just, you know, oh, well, you know, okay, we've got this project, it's had a great outcome for the community, but then all of the humans working in this space, or, you know, doing the data analysis and all those type of things. I think I've been thinking a lot about that lately. And I think the pandemic did, for a moment, strip us back to human elements. And I think moving forward, we want to keep that.
Yeah. And it was, in a lot of cases, government regulation forcing us to strip back. And, you know, often against the will of commercial interests who didn't want certain restrictions or whatever to be put in place temporary or otherwise, but just demonstrated, didn't it, that, as you say, when there was a reason, things that seemed really immovable, including, you know, certain commercial interests of, you know, and other stakeholders in our society, their decision-making or their influence power was much reduced compared to the basic human elements and the basic public good.
Yeah, and I think also we talk about like the human elements, but then also how the digital elements really dictated our human experience, which was good and bad. Well, depending who you ask, depending how strong your internet connection was, you know, for your quality of life at that time, and obviously other things as well. But it just really showed me how it is so entwined now. And even just getting information, right? Like I was thinking, I think I did a podcast on it or I talked to somebody about it during that time. But it's like, if I didn't have the internet and I was relying on, you know, paper to come into my letterbox or whatever, like to get up to date, you didn't know. And then there'll be people that missed out on really relevant, life-threatening, changing, influencing information. So yeah, that digital element. And so having a strong internet connection and enough internet, if you know, you might have a family of 8 people all trying to use like, 20 gig a month or 5 gig a month or 1 gig a month or whatever it is, trying to do homework, work, you know, these are all things that we just, not take for granted isn't the word, but like these are the things that we have to do, like these are the things we do. And yeah, just how that really shifted and changed. And I think the digital divide was really, really stark. And we did pick up that conversation, but I think it's time we pick it up again and, you know, start the actions as well. So I think in that there were some things where that quick response of digitization for some companies, businesses, people themselves, again, just like really upskilling themselves because they had to, was something that we want to move forward. But the focus on that digital equity inclusion and that conversation, I'd like to see that come back so we can actually action things. And there is a lot happening around the place, but I think that really made it really, really real, particularly when things like education, there'll be kids now that are 2 years behind purely because they didn't have the access that they needed at the time.
Oh, yeah, the education piece is absolutely huge. As you know, that's a big area of interest for me. Yeah. So that kind of brings us to the next question, which is from Joe Appleton, who has not been on the podcast yet, although we should organize that. But Joe's colleague from Be Smart Cities, Tom Mueller, was on the podcast in episode 72. So Joe has asked, as smart city storytellers, what are we failing at? There is a growing mistrust of data collection, AI solutions, and even wonderful 15-minute cities are being attacked. Are we failing to tell the right narrative? Are we asking the wrong questions? Or are we simply living in an echo chamber? And how can we showcase the benefits of smart cities in a better way to, you know, engage that community and tell that story?
Yes, I love this question. And Joe is amazing also. Hi, Joe. So I think one of the biggest things is we've worked out, again, still pockets of things happening, right? We've worked out that we can use data to tell stories. And like we have for years, but depends on what data it actually is. And I think, again, that even the smart city storytellers, like again, why I think I shifted smart community a long time ago, because at least then you can, like people know what a community is, when smart city seems just very lacked buildings and, you know, equipment and technology and that type of thing. And so I think the language that we use, we're like the translators. I was talking to someone else on the podcast about this. It's not translation, because it's like you're also adding your own, you know, nuance and your own context and your own, what you're adding, you know, your own story as well. But I think if we start to think about this as it's not what story do I want to tell, it's what story does the audience need to hear, and not in a, or tell them what they need to hear kind of way. But it's like, well, what is it that we're losing, or like that we're losing sight of, or that is making people feel, you know, uneasy and mistrustful? But I also think there is always going to be a certain amount of people that are into conspiracy theories, that are looking for something to kind of point to and whatever else. But I do think not bringing community along the journey of what we're planning to do until it's too, like until we've already decided what we're going to do, then we do community engagement or something along those lines, which is a very traditional approach, actually bring people along the journey as well, which I know is really difficult, particularly for governments, because when you start bringing people along the journey really early, you might not know where you're going to end up, which is not a position that's like comfortable. You know, we need to learn how to be comfortable with that uncertainty. But also,
and the community doesn't like that. Like, let's be honest, we're in Australia in a conversation about that right now, that if there's not enough detail, because the government is literally asking for an agreement one way or another, but there's not enough detail, people get upset about the fact that there's not enough detail, even though that's the whole point of the consultation process. It's tricky because there's an element of the community having enough literacy in the way these kinds of consultation processes work to even understand that there isn't detail yet. That's part of the reason we're having the conversation.
Yeah. And then it's, but what is the question that we're asking?
Yeah, exactly.
As well, is really important.
It's both and.
Yeah, it is. And I think like that's not, again, that's not a full answer because it's this uncertainty, right? But I think Joe's right in the sense of like sometimes we can live in an echo chamber. And I've often found that just in the work that I do, I hang out with people that kind of think like me. I mean, I'm always a bit weird, but, you know, think like me, do the things I do until I started hanging out in like different kind of circles. And then I go, oh, that's right. Some people's, that's, you know, their thinking is completely different to mine because based on their experiences.
I think I'm a perfect example of this because I have no background in anything quote unquote smart, you know, like nothing local government, nothing built environment, none of that. Like my background was very basically just like school and then become a teacher. And then long story became the producer of this podcast. And I knew nothing. Like I didn't even really understand what the point of the podcast was when it first started from a concept. But obviously I've listened to many hours of your voice, Zoe. And also of all the guests, like I've learned so much, and I actually think my experience, I'm a super advocate now for like the smart community approach and for just finding out more. And it's opened up a whole world to me that I had no idea existed. And I feel like there is a place for, obviously this is an industry podcast, like smart community podcast is a podcast talking to other people in the smart, this is the echo chamber. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a total place for that. But I feel like there is a need or a place or whatever for conversations and just information, because I would be willing to bet there's a lot of people just in the general community who have no idea that these conversations are even happening. And that when you actually hear from the people who are working on, like you always say, Zoe, the boring stuff behind the scenes, one, you start to realize that, wow, there's a lot more that goes into this than I hadn't thought about, you know, but also that these people, like they know what they're doing. They're not just flying by the seat of their pants. Like, sure, there's some uncertainty because pandemics happen and like technology evolves and all that. But like generally everyone who's working in this space is really intelligent and really working hard to do the best job that they can in whatever their area is. So you start to learn, okay, there's good people at the helm. We can, you know, the more I hear from different guests in their different areas, I'm like, well, cool. Well, like that, they know what they're doing. They're the expert in that. I'll listen to them and believe, you know, and trust them when they talk about whatever they think needs to happen next. But also, it's just opening up people's minds to the possibilities. And I know you talk about that with like possible brain theory and stuff, but like, you know, because there's been a lot of conversations that I've had in my personal life over the last 5 or 6 years where I've said to somebody, oh, you know, like some topic would come up, like electric vehicles or digital twins, you know, something that has been discussed on the podcast. And I actually know a little bit about it. I know I'm not an expert, but I know enough to kind of go, hey, this, yeah, that's a thing. Like this, here's some information, like go and listen to the Smart Community podcast. So I feel like there's opportunity there for, obviously, again, this is an echo chamber, this podcast, because that's the whole point. You're talking to people in the industry, but there needs to be avenues somehow to get some of that information out to the general public in accessible ways.
Yeah. And I think people that I interview, I'm like, honestly, but I hope that their podcast isn't an echo chamber and who's listening, because that's, I want to make it accessible for everyone. But
I think it is.
But also the only people that are going to find it are people that are looking at, well, or the episode title or whatever. And they might not be interested in all the episodes or whatever, but they might be really interested. I mean, you see the spike in like certain things, like when we had, oh, I'm trying to think now, even like Boopsy Moran, you know, it's people interested in school and, you know, walking to school and all those type of things. Those people are going to go, oh, wow, that, you know, I'm going to listen. And I really enjoyed that podcast, actually, mainly because Boopsy asked me a lot of questions, which I was like, oh, now I have to use my brain again. But yeah, so I do think from a storytelling perspective, we need to realize that we don't have to use all the buzzwords, use all the whatever, because actually what is really important to the community is for them to feel part of the conversation, right? And they're not going to be searching smart cities or the this or the that, but they might be really interested in, I don't know, water use or something like that. And then and that's when they can learn about, you know, how we can do smart water metering, but all those other things, the data and all those other things that go into it. So
yeah, and it's when it's relevant to them, right? Like how is it relevant to me in my regular little suburban life? That's the stuff that I think the community would be really interested in, but we have to frame it in a way that makes it relevant to them and then makes clear where they can find more information if they want to.
And even just using the word data, for example, people like that automatically will shut people down, right? Like, I love data. You love data. We're all about data. But for general community, they're like, oh God, what if someone asked me, what is data? You know, or whatever, like what, I don't know those terms or whatever. So we need to use language that is actually useful. And not even just the, like we're talking about general community, even just people that I work with and consult with, they might not come from like an engineering background. They might be a planner or something like that. And they use data all the time, but it really depends on how, but they're not a data analyst or whatever. And so even using different language in those type of, you know, if you're writing a document for somebody, you've got to be really aware of the audience.
But I think that only comes by actually interacting with the audience, right? Because then you don't realize that if you're actually, maybe you're pitching it way over their head just from the jargon perspective. And yeah, you just need to change that language so that the audience feels included and understands.
And really listen. And like, what are they telling us is important? Yeah, and it might not be what they, you know, it's what they're saying, but also what they're not saying as well. So yeah, it's definitely not a one size fits all answer. But I was just going to add, I've been listening to a book called Data Feminism after, I think, Nancy Odendahl suggested it. And what I really liked about this book was that, and it kind of leads on from Invisible Women, if people are familiar with that as well. But what I liked about this book is it talks about the audience of you as an audience member taking in like data storytelling, and then how it's not just like what's missing or whatever, but it's actually how you tell the story as well. And that traditionally it's like, let the data speak for itself, which, you know, during the data science review, they were talking about some of the people that were like resources as part of my, you know, whatever. So I knew the names. Whereas thing from a data feminism lens or what they call it, it's like, well, actually we are emotional beings. So no matter what the data speaking for itself is doing, we will take it in based on our experiences, our emotion, our background, our whatever. So actually embrace that and use that. And it's just, that shift in thinking that then you can be better storytellers. And again, it can be used for good or bad, right? We know this. Like, we know, like, you can learn from advertising, right? Like, it tells us things or whatever, but then how do we use that for public good and real public good and not, you know, propaganda and whatever else, but like thinking about that, because we're all humans at the end of the day. So whether we want to strip the emotion out of things or not, it's always there.
It is. Okay. Well, our final question for today, and there have been some that we haven't been able to get to, so thank you so much for sending them in. We'll hopefully do another one of these episodes and get to more questions soon. But the final question is from Mike Barlow, who was on episode 114 and 115. And Mike has asked, is there any chance, Zoe, that you will be joining us at the Smart Cities Expo World Congress in Barcelona in November?
You know, I've been thinking about this question a lot, and I've been thinking about getting there and having a few conversations with people. The answer is that I really, really want to go. So I think I will. But it's like 75% at the moment.
Few details to work out, just practically.
Few details to work out. But if you're going to be there, let me know so then I can feed into my decision making.
Just convince her, people. She wants to go.
I really want to go. There's conversations are happening. Yeah. Yes, for sure. And if anyone's going, let me know. If anyone has ideas of, you know, how maybe someone wants to fly me there, who knows? That would be great.
Open to sponsorship opportunities, eh?
Open to sponsorship opportunities as always. But no, the plan is to do it, to be there, because I think it's just going to be, because I went last year and it was an amazing experience. This year, but I kind of decided to jam a lot in, which is not like me at all. So the plan would be to spend a bit more time actually in Barcelona, hang out with my smart community friends there. And I know there'll be so many people there, and I think it'll be an amazing opportunity to connect again in person.
Absolutely. Well, stay tuned, everybody. We'll keep you updated. And thank you so much for listening to 350 episodes of the Smart Community Podcast. Well done, Zoe. Very proud of you. Very pleased to have been involved in this project.
Massive thank you to you for producing 350 episodes of this podcast. Oh,
you're welcome. And to everyone listening, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Smart Community.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.